ऐसी मशीन लगाऊंगा, इस साइड से आलू घुसेगा, उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
Hi, this is the Talking Stuff Network and you're listening to episode 69 of Attention Plus with Arnab Ray. Before we continue, let me tell you about the other podcast we had from Talking Stuff on WhatsApp Geeks this week. We talk about the news from CES and the upcoming Galaxy S20 from Samsung. And on Binge On, Rajeshwari and I recommend some of the English movies that we can watch anytime, any number of times. And now, on to our podcast, episode 69. I do wish we had a professional tambola or bingo caller just for this, so I could get a very clever naughty number, 6969. So Arnab, why 69? Yes. Naughty and not 96? Is it ageism?
I don't know. It's see, I've reached the stage where the numbers 69 and 96 don't get any kind of in me any longer. Whenever I think of the number 69, I think of Lance Klusner's t-shirt.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. Yeah.
Yes. So that was the only time I remember that. I remember a jersey with 69, and that was Lance Klusner. So
coincidentally, WhatsApp Geeks was episode 96 last week. And here we are with 69.
By the way, 96 is not, 69, it's not just, 69 is, in case you haven't figured it out, it is because of the way the digits align themselves. If you look at the way 96 aligns, it's just two people sleeping with their backs towards
each other. Oh, right. Actually, yeah.
That's why it's not 96. Just letting you know.
Right. And summer of 69 apparently was about, not about the year.
I don't know.
You mentioned that in a podcast, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I thought it was about the year.
No. In an interview with Brandon Adams, he mentioned that actually Summer of 69 alluded to the position and not to the year. But especially in India, he said that nobody ever got that.
I'm
a bit of your childhood.
I'm very skeptical about that. I don't know. I'm very skeptical about that.
Yeah, it makes sense for it to be the year.
Yes. I mean, that's really, I don't know.
Anyway, we were off last week, so you've got quite a bit of stuff to talk about piled up. So what's the first thing that we're going to talk about?
The first thing I want to talk about was, something which I had tweeted last week when Deepika Padukone came to support Aishi Ghosh at the, who was protesting against. At that point of time, I don't know what exactly they're protesting against. I think in this game, we're back to the old fee hike for JNU, because of course, everything gets conflated. It's CAA, fee hike, Kashmir. It's like pretty much everything.
And somewhere there's some anti-Hindutva.
We'll come to that. But I think let's start with the intersection of Bollywood and politics, which is what I find the most fascinating. Is that, and I had pointed out at that point of time, and again after that some other people pointed out too, that this is not the first time that she has made a political statement. Whether it is linked to the release of a movie might be coincidental, but it's not, because this is the second time when she has decided. And even in general, this is, you know, it's easy to trivialize anything. In this case, it's perhaps worth trivializing, but to say that things are, you know, publicity stunts. But it's also true that most movie stars, they do things before a movie is released. Otherwise, they pretty much do not have any reason to, I mean, unlike most of us who are looking for likes on Twitter, we're looking for social media approbation. I don't think, you know, stars at that level, they're looking for that. So I think any kind of public engagement is ultimately driven by something else. So for those of you who don't know, in 2010, I think, when Lafange Parinde came out, Deepika Padukone went on, I think, DD, and in one of, which again, and we're going to play that clip, right?
मैं पॉलिटिक्स के बारे में ज़्यादा कुछ जानती नहीं हूँ, पर जो भी थोड़ा बहुत मैं देखती हूँ टीवी पे, राहुल गांधी जो कर रहे हैं हमारे देश के लिए, आई थिंक वो एक क्लासिक एग्जाम्पल है, नौजवान जो हमारे देश के लिए बहुत कुछ कर रहे हैं, एंड आई थिंक होपफुली वन डे वो खुद प्राइम मिनिस्टर बन जाएंगे।
आप चाहती हैं राहुल गांधी प्रधानमंत्री
जी
बने,
बिल्कुल।
क्या खास बात आपको राहुल गांधी में दिखती है अन्य लोगों से हटकर?
आई थिंक वो यूथ के साथ बहुत कनेक्ट होते हैं, और उनका जो सोच है, जो विचार है, ट्रेडिशनल भी है, बट एट द सेम टाइम फ्यूचरिस्टिक भी अप्रोच है उनका, एंड आई थिंक हमारे देश के लिए वो बहुत ही इम्पोर्टेंट है।
अभी आप
सो इन दिस क्लिप शी बेसिकली सेज, not in a very subtle way, it's not even in a very subtle way, you know, that the future of the country is Rahul Gandhi, and you know, she sees great potential in him and everything. So this was, you have to remember two things. Is to remember that this was a time when the Congress was in power. This was not anti-establishment. This was not which many in the film fraternity want to say, no, we're not pro-BJP or pro-Congress, we are anti-establishment. They were the establishment at that point of time. And again, she's not talking also about, you know, the more, rather the, at least the finer sounding things like the idea of India or secularism, liberalism. And of course, they're dog whistles. So, you know, if I say that, you know, I'm against, you know, the right, or, you know, it's pretty obvious who you are for. But in this case, it's not even that. It's like Rahul Gandhi is amazing. And you can say that's a valid opinion, but again, we know this is not just a question, it's not just something which we have found out. But even in 2010, we knew that he's absolutely useless. So for somebody to say this cannot be, I mean, I'll be very forthright, this cannot be, logically be a valid opinion, to be honest. I mean, at that level of, you know, how obsequious this whole thing is. It is, again, not a statement for a principle. It is a statement for a particular person. It is exactly similar to the kind of questions that Modi gets, that how do you have so much energy? When do you go to sleep? It's in that vein. It's in that vein of supreme chatukarita. But the thing is that at that point of time, nobody noticed it, right? It was only people like me who kind of, at that point, if I was more engaged in Bollywood, I've kind of shifted away over the years. It's almost like 10 years ago. But I remember, you know, catching it at that point of time, because it was in India Today also. So what the interesting thing is not so much about Deepika Padukone, but the fact that this wasn't news at that point of time. Now, it could be that the PR for Lafange Parinde was really bad, but it's just that in those days, being this level of sycophancy for the Congress was considered to be okay. I mean, in this day and age, if somebody, like, for instance, when Vivek Oberoi made that hagiography about Modi, people were laughing at him, and for good reason. But in these days, this causes an outrage, because suddenly, you know, everybody is now suddenly aware of Godi media, as if this quote unquote Godi media did not exist for the Congress for the last 50 years. As if it didn't exist, as if this kind of bowing down and, you know, kneeling in front of those in power, especially those in Congress, and, you know, especially the Gandhi family, that this has never happened before. And just look at this audio clip, and you will realize what things used to pass underneath the radar at that point of time. Something as blatant as this. So for me, Deepika Padukone going and standing, it was, in her case, I'm not saying that every Bollywood hasti who's going there is motivated by, you know, publicity for a movie. I don't think so. It's something else, perhaps, but I don't think it's true. It's not a generic statement that I can make. And Deepika Padukone, again, is not, let's just say she's not neutral. I think that's also not, I mean, I don't think that movie stars have to be neutral. I mean, you can be a Congress stooge. I mean, there are many BJP stooges now. So, you know, they definitely can be Congress stooges, and many of them are. But I still think there's no shame in it. But I think that it's considered shameful to be a BJP stooge nowadays if you're in Bollywood. I mean, by the way, before BJP became powerful, you would hardly find any BJP stooges. You would wonder why that was the case. So, of course, there will be some people who will obviously want to suck up to the authorities. And that of course, happens. But in case of Deepika Padukone, it's just that she
in a way, it's honest. She genuinely is a Congress person. So I, again, it's perfectly okay for her as a Congress person. Because honestly, even in 2010, I don't think that she needed to go that much out there for Rahul Gandhi. Even by 2010, people already knew that there was nothing going to happen for Rahul Gandhi, at least. So I think this comes from a really deep sense of conviction. Another thing, I think the whole PR campaign with this recent Instagram, this makeup for acid victims, I think it's gone off the rails. I think it's been terribly done. Of course, everything over here, there is a level of insincerity about everything. And again, in simpler times, maybe people would have not have been this outraged. But now the thing is that because it's also true that because Deepika Padukone has come out so strongly, consistently for the Congress, he's already a target for people on the right. There is no doubt. And then she goes and, her PR goes and does something like this. So obviously, you know, there is nothing which the right wing likes more than to outwoke the woke. So this is again, you know, being hoisted by their own petard. I mean, again, I don't think that Deepika Padukone meant any disrespect or anybody meant any disrespect. So I'm not going to question her, I'm not going to question her intent on this. But the fact is, again, it was a PR stunt which I believe grossly misfired, given the standards of wokeness today, given the standards of what can be done, what can't be done, and given the fact that she's basically set, there is a crowd after her now. And for her to do this at this point of time, this was definitely not going to pass under the radar, and it didn't. So the next item that I want to talk about was Indira Jaisingh's tweet that the mother of Nirbhaya should forgive the rapists of her daughter in the same way that Sonia Gandhi forgave those who killed Rajiv Gandhi. Now, this is coming from somebody who I believe was the Solicitor General of India, and under the Congress, of course. And obviously a very important legal luminary. So this is not just a random tweet from some guy, person with an opinion. I mean, that's of course very common on social media nowadays. Take some random guy's, outrageous tweet and then outrage over it. Who cares? But in this case, this is a serious person who's talking about something serious, because that's really her wheelhouse, that she's a very famous lawyer. So for her to firstly say that it was Sonia Gandhi who, the death sentence was commuted by Sonia Gandhi because of her forgiveness. First of all, there is the legal part of it, that there is no notion of the victim changing the quantum of punishment. Now, of course, in the case of Sonia Gandhi, it might be true. In the case of Sonia Gandhi, it might be true because of the way the law works. But from a legal point of view, this is not CARP. Okay, this is not CARP. This is not tribal justice in the Northwest Frontier Province where you have blood money and people decide, okay, whether we want the blood money or not. This is not the way things work, or shouldn't work. Now, in case of Sonia Gandhi, everything works. We all know that. But even from a technical legality, she could not have changed the quantum of punishment. And secondly, and this is even more important, they didn't just kill Rajiv Gandhi. They killed a lot of people there. So it's not even her call to forgive. This is again perhaps symptomatic of people who say that everybody is the same under the eyes of law. Constitution is very important. The Constitution is important only when it is against the BJP. When it is Sonia Gandhi, obviously Constitution is not important, because Sonia Gandhi has the right to forgive somebody who's killed other people. And secondly, she has the right to forgive, and she doesn't have any right to forgive because she's not the law, except she is. So I think this tweet is very illuminating, in the sense that people who otherwise are strong constitutionalists, and this is again why I feel the Gandhi family is such a cancer on India. It's not the Congress Party, which I believe is redeemable. It is the Gandhi family, which is not. Is that is that they have created a culture, and they have created, and this has become part of our culture, that the Gandhi family has absolute right to do whatever they want. Whatever they want. And this tweet, I don't think she was trying to imply that. I think she was trying to say, no, forgive. But the subtext of this is what I found worth commenting on. That firstly, it is neither Nirbhaya's mother's call to forgive them, neither is it Sonia Gandhi's call to forgive them. And secondly, Sonia, at least in the case of Nirbhaya's mother, she is the mother of the only victim there. In the case of Sonia Gandhi, she is not the relative of the only victim. So there are two ways in which I found this outrageous, this comment. This is not a commentary on whether somebody can be forgiven or whether somebody should not be forgiven, whether this is worth forgiving or not. Again, this is a topic for another day. It's a topic for another day. And I've said before, I support the death penalty because I believe that if you don't have the death penalty, and especially in a country like India, you are the death penalty is really the government or the state stepping in and saying, okay, we will. It's not a question of, death penalty is not about retribution. It is not about, it is about retribution. I'm sorry. It is not about reform. And I think that justice is about retribution. I don't feel that justice should not be about retribution. So when people say, it's very easy for people who haven't suffered personally to comment about what other people should or should not do. It is perhaps the easiest thing to do, especially when it's something as traumatic as what has happened to her. It is very easy for other people to take a high moral ground. Once you go there, come back and tell me how you feel and whether you feel the urge for revenge. If the government, if the state does not kill someone, because that is the highest form of revenge, then the people will. Especially in a country like India, it's not like US or Sweden where the rule of law is very strong. If you do not allow death sentence, then there will be vigilantism. There will be people being lynched on the streets. And the reason why the government has to have a humane death penalty is the government has to say, look, death penalty is the worst we can give. We can't torture that guy. So you're not going to get that. So this is kind of a halfway. I've said this before, but just summarizing it. But in over here, my point is not so much about the death penalty, but about this, beatific halo around Sonia Gandhi, that even now, that we are subject to from time to time. Often people don't even realize that they actually elevate people in the Gandhi family, even people who know the law, unwittingly almost. They elevate them and show their hand that the Gandhis are not considered just like you and me. It's just like the fact that Robert Vadra, in that famous list of people who were exempt from search, the only person mentioned by name was Robert Vadra, and it was considered to be perfectly okay as to why he would, given that he holds absolutely no position except the Damad in law. That's it. That's all he has. Well, moving on to the main topic for the day, because this thing just refuses to die down, is students versus Modi. So I feel that, first of all, when we say students versus Modi, I read an article which said, are students the really real opposition for Modi? Let's take a step back and say, what students? So over the last few weeks, we have seen protests against Modi from students from a handful of elite universities in India, that too from the humanities. Okay, this is not, when you say Modi versus students, the universe of Indian students is way broader, is way bigger than what we have seen. So to call it, and so there are countries in which there are student unrest, where the student unrest is much more pervasive. Here it is not that. It is basically a number of elite universities, that to very specific elements of that elite universities versus Modi. So first, let us define the depth. Let's first create a glossary of what we mean when we say students in this case. So for me, I think this is one question that I've always had, and I think I'm kind of coming to an answer, is that why bother? Let's take the case of Kanhaiya Kumar. Kanhaiya Kumar, there has been
JNU Students Union president for time immemorial, except that we don't know any of their names. We know Kanhaiya Kumar's. And now we will know Aishi Ghosh's. Why in the last few years is there, and we know why, because they do something. In the case of Kanhaiya Kumar, he did not say Bharat Tere Tukre Hoge. He did not say that. That's absolutely wrong. But even though he did not say it, there was the BJP-affiliated media, which through fake news made it as if he said it. It was almost as if, and if you kept on wondering, why are they creating an opposition for the government? And that is it just because they're stupid? I don't think so. I think they want, when they say students, I think Modi wants, and Modi, and you know, when I say Modi, I mean Modi in the plural. The BJP strategy think tank, I think, wants this more than anything else. First of all, when you are, again, voting is based on emotion. And when we go to the polls, we vote not on things like GDP, which is really what the government should be concerned about. But we don't vote about. We don't vote on it. We essentially vote on identity, and we vote on feel good. And for the BJP, which thrives on identity-based politics, there has to be a notion of an enemy or the other. Now, for years, it has been Gandhi, it has been the Nehru family and the Congress, and the BJP loves to flog that, you know, dying horse, that it is all, like, the Congress is absolutely incompetent. They can't get anything done, you know, too. And so over, you know,
And of all things, they sent Manishankar Iyer into that.
No, yeah, I think they sent money. I don't think they sent Manishankar Iyer. I think Manishankar Iyer went there. I don't think
right
because there is a confluence of ideas. So I don't think anybody in the Congress sends anyone there. That would imply some sort of thought and strategy, which they absolutely do not have at this point of time. It's a random people turn up, and since they were part of Congress, so Congress turns up. So, as a matter of fact, Congress should not be associated with it. I think there is a reason why perhaps Rahul Gandhi hasn't gone there yet. Because I think that would, I think at least somebody with half a light bulb still on realizes that that for Rahul Gandhi to go there is exactly the thing Modi wants. So, Modi needs an opposition. Modi needs somebody that they can, and this is a cornerstone of any kind of identity politics, is that they need somebody to point to and say, that person is the enemy. That person is against who we all are. And that, we don't mean a person, but that vaguely defined thing is what we are against. Now, for these elite university students, what they don't realize is that people in humanities who have been studying for years based on government subsidy, they might think that the nation owes it to them. I remember saying that the right of education, of course, the right of education is primary education. That has not got nothing to do with what they're doing. But for huge swaths of the country, and this is something which is supreme, which I feel supremely ironic at these people who are always protesting against privilege, fail to recognize their own privilege. That for large swaths of the country, these people are, I don't think it's fair to the students, by the way, but the way the country looks at them, when I say country, it could be uncles and aunties and people on WhatsApp and students in non-elite institutes who see these people as people who are unfairly given a larger chunk of national resources than they give back. Now you can say, oh, we produce so many papers, we produce this. Ultimately, people in non-elite institutions don't really care for your publications. And this is exactly, if you find the other pieces of news items that in JNU, do you know that, you know, PhD thesis is based on Savita Bhavi? First of all, it was a master's thesis. And I've seen that on, you know, this is the kind of thing that riles people up, right? If you think that, okay, I work all day, you know, and my tax money is going for some other guy to do research on Savita Bhavi. Firstly, this is an unfair characterization of all research that goes on in these meetings. First of all. But of course, an emotional thing you think, right? Automatically you think if this person is looking at Savita Bhavi, this other person must be looking at X video, another person must be looking at Pornhub. That's basically all they do, those degenerates. So this is the common perception. Of course, there is some grain of truth in it, but obviously it's an exaggeration. It's a stereotype. It's a caricature. And that is another part of identity politics. By the way, these students do it too. Their Brahminical patriarchy and all that, that is also a caricature. So everybody needs some enemy. So they have their own enemies and their own caricatures. But right now, before we go to the students' perspective, let's look at it from the right wing, the Hindu right wing's perspective. So this is not just, so the thing with students is that they're a pretty secular target, right? It's not a question of Muslims. It's a question of students. And that's why this whole notion of anti-nationals, that these people, these privileged few, they stay in universities for decades. They produce work of middling quality. They're having too good a time while you have to go out and work. So, and on top of that, they get so much from the country, yet they're always cribbing about the country. They're always saying Bharat ke tukre honge, which they don't, by the way. But since it's a caricature, let's presume that's true. So this marvelous caricature that is constructed of students in the elite universities is what the BJP is packaging as its enemy. Add in things like Khan Market Gang, Lutyens Gang, and you basically see that it is a definition of privilege. And this is what I find amusing. Everybody here, even the students, are struggling against privilege. Everybody is struggling against privilege, except everybody points at each other and says, you are the privileged person and I am the underprivileged person. And the paradox is both of them are in a way right and both of them are in a way wrong.
And that is the fun of looking at it as a centrist, because you see the incongruity on both sides. So now let's look at the students are a very, very convenient, is very, very convenient other for the BJP at this point of time, when it's really very difficult to get people riled up about the Congress. I mean, the BJP still keeps trying, right? Nehru did something in the 60s. How does it matter what Nehru did in the 60s? What is Nehru doing now? So, you know, there's only so much we can do Nehru, and there's so much we can do Rahul Gandhi. But these students, they are here and they are now. You can imagine them, like, you know, going and reading Savita Bhavi comics right now at this point of time while you are stuck in a traffic jam, and then protesting against this very country and saying what a shitty country this is. So this it's very easy to get angry at these people. And like, so the government supported media, which exists now, and the government is doing its best. It's doing its best. And which brings me to the students, who are also doing their best to make sure that these stereotypes are actually validated. So for students, if you look at the history of JNU, you know, JNU has always been like this. It's not a question of are they against BJP. Yes, BJP is perhaps a higher level of enemy than the Congress, but they are against authority. And if you remember when you were a student, and it takes a little bit of time for me to remember when I was a student, you know, students are in general, they are against authority, right? You know, think of a place like JNU or Jadavpur University. You've come out of a protected life. You're staying in campus. You're staying on campus. You're being exposed to all these ideas which actually emotionally connect with you, because you've left house. You've left your home, and you know when you're 18 or 19, or in the case of JNU students, when you're, you know, 69 or 79 years old, I'm kidding, of course. But anti-authoritarianism is something which all students are, because authority represents their parents. At least that's the way I have always looked at it. So when you go to college, you are breaking free. This has been recognized throughout the ages, that you are basically breaking free of your parents. So there is. Not just, I wouldn't say a trauma, but there is a sense of relief. And you're still angry at the last 18 or 19 years. And so
when you people lash out against the authority, it's basically lashing out against a father figure or a, you know, mother figure or the family. So without people recognizing or even realizing it, it's this resentment that people have of being not being allowed to go out at night or to stay at home or to not go out with friends. Or so this kind of lashes out, this kind of, and it's not just, it doesn't happen on over one day. It kind of accumulates over the years that you can't really hate your parents also, because there are also other familial bonds which make you love them. So it's not a question of just hating your parents, but what your parents represent, hence the word patriarchy comes in so many times, is that the struggle is essentially against your own tradition, and that's why you find so many loaded words against Hindu practices there. Because most people there are Hindus, actually. And they cannot lash out against using a vocabulary that they would believe would target another religion, because they don't think, because they're Hindus, their parents are Hindus too. So what they feel has held them back are these Hindu traditions. So it kind of hits out against that. Now, when the Congress was in power, this connection between religion, tradition, and authority wasn't the mapping wasn't so perfect. But now with Modi Shah, I mean, look, think about Modi Shah. Modi Shah, and they're like, when the way they talk, they remind you of every uncle you've ever talked to, right? So exactly, you know, hum badalte nahi, you know, the environment is changing, you know, the exact same thing. And, you know, things like in Mahabharat days, we had a nuclear bomb. And I've heard this so many times growing up. Okay. So, you know, when they talk, if anything that comes out, it reminds them of that. So this visceral hatred of traditions, that their own parents, that comes out against, and this is, by the way, exactly what Modi and Shah want. It's not something they're very smart. So they know that this is, you know, they take that in. So that's why you see all these, you know, all these signs, all these, you know, this is against some. Now I'm not even sure what people are protesting against. They're protesting against, I mean, what is going on? I mean, NRC is kind of off the pages now, right? I mean, the government's basically taking a stand back. I totally understand. And as I've said in previous podcasts, I do not support NRC for multiple reasons. But we're not protesting that right now, are we? What's really going on? Is it a fee increase at JNU? Is that the problem? I mean, so it's just become protest for protest's sake. And protest is being led by people who are just basically pissed off at the BJP government. And there's always be a set section of people who are pissed off at the government because they didn't want this government. And you see it's being... But I still strongly believe it's primarily a social media thing, which is powerful nowadays. So, but it's primarily an urban social media thing. But the BJP is milking it. This BJP is happy. Some of the people who are protesting are trying to bring the Indian flag. They're trying to say, you know, we are actually talking about the constitution. Now, this is, I think, a better strategy, because if you try to make this about identity, if you try to make it as, you know, if you try to have religiously loaded slogans, then this is precisely what the BJP would want, because this would feed into that stereotype of them. However, the fundamental illogical, the fundamental lack of logic of saying that we are establishing the constitution by protesting is, well, if the CA is unconstitutional, then that constitutionality would be challenged in the courts. That is the constitutional way of doing things. So what the protest isn't actually constitutional. Constitutional, you should allow the constitution to take its... Like if you're really a constitutionalist, again, I think that they aren't. Actually, it's a constitution itself is a kind of a religion in a way. It's a secular religion. It's a national religion. But they're not doing that either. So when you are sitting at Shaheen Bagh, it is, I don't see how it is constitutional.
it is that you think that you don't like what's going on, which you're perfectly allowed to do. You're perfectly allowed to protest also in a democratic country. But of course, the lines are blurred as to what and how long and how much you can inconvenience others as part of your protest. Given the fact, again, this would make sense if we had an NRC going on, if it would make sense if people are knocking your doors. I totally understand. That's why I said that if you go and ask people, actually go and ask people for documents with the threat that if you don't provide the documents, you'll be sent to jail. This is essentially civil war. That's why NRC, I believe, is a terrible idea, because this is a fuel for civil war. When you try to push people out of their homes, they'll fight. There's nothing left to lose at this point of time. So, but we're not doing that.
Arnab, how do you see this playing out?
Go on.
How do you see this playing out? I mean, the government obviously has infinite patience.
The government likes it. This is good. See, this takes the real stuff off the news. This takes the economy of the news. This is the government's perfect thing. This suits the government for fine. The government does not want a day in which there is no news, in which case people will start asking the questions that they don't want to be asked. See, this is how this whole thing is counterproductive. If you are actually against the government, you wouldn't be doing this. I mean, you've made your point, really. At this point of time, I don't think what new point is being made. I mean, I understand that some Bollywood stars have movies to promote. But other than that, I don't see where this is going. I really don't. And I think that this helps the government at this point of time. And because we might not be seeing this, because this is the silent social media, which you don't see on Twitter, which is WhatsApp. But in WhatsApp, I think the government, especially because they are perceived as you know, cracking the whip on these freeloaders. Because remember, just like authority, just like these students are against authority, remember that authority also exists. Those parents and their uncles haven't gone away. They are on WhatsApp sending good morning messages every day. And for them, it's just like they resent them, though those people resent them back. Don't think that the resentment goes only one way. So there is quite a big section of people, and remember, these people vote. So these people are pretty much happy with what's going on. So it might seem, if you get your news from NDTV or you get your news from Twitter Outrage Factory, that the country is going to the dogs and the government is on the back foot. But I personally don't think that is the case at all. I think the government would be in a much more uncomfortable place if the focus was on the economy, if the focus was on farmer suicides, for instance. These are the ones which are exactly the places the BJP does not want to go in. But put Kanhaiya Kumar on TV, put Aishi Ghosh on TV, they love this. This is exactly what they want. And Aishi Ghosh then brings up Kashmir. Perfect. Perfect. So, with CA NRC, I think CA NRC, at least I think a lot of people actually feel that, you know, because people are inherently afraid of the government. So even people who have no reason to feel that they might be kicked out of the country, there is some kind of apprehension given the fear that people have of government. But fee increase of JNU students, it's very evident what happened in JNU. Two sections of two student unions fought. Okay. And this has been going on from time immemorial. I grew up in Bengal where they would fight all the time. Okay, this would be a rite of passage while growing up. You go and you fight. Nobody used hockey sticks for playing hockey. Okay. Everybody knows why there is a hockey stick in every campus. Like, everybody has a hockey stick. It's for fighting. So, I mean, we haven't been playing good hockey for ages, right? Because we forgot what hockey sticks are actually for. So, we have reached a stage where essentially two unions fighting among themselves, which has been going on in ages in JNU and every place, JU every place, in Calcutta every place. JNU was actually one of the places, Jadavpur University, where this actually didn't happen a lot, because again, being an elite institution and having a very strong engineering faculty, everybody in engineering faculty was studying for GRE, GATE or other things. So there's no time for all of this stuff. But fighting used to happen, like people pulling each other's collars and stuff used to happen. There was no cell phones in those days, so there was nothing. You couldn't take like one isolated shot and then people would think this is what's going on all the time. So those things weren't there. So now we have this essentially an inter-campus battle between two groups. Again, ABVP are goons and GNUSU are goons. Both of them are goons. And again, I wouldn't even call them goons. I mean, this is the way student politics is. What do you think student politics is about? It's about fighting and, you know, pulling and punching each other. So this has always been the case. If you don't like it, then don't be a part of it. But at this point of time, I don't think the nation has a patience between of these two privileged groups fighting with each other. I think that this might be something which Anurag Kashyap and all these people might want to, you know, because they're always thirsting for, I want to be, you know, I want to be George Clooney. You know, that's their fantasy. You know, they have so much money, they have so much fame at this point that they want to be George Clooney. So what they don't realize is what they're doing is they're doing something which is very, 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 you know, it's the same thing as like the impeachment over here. This is why I don't support, I mean, I think that what Trump has done is impeachable, but in a way, I think Trump would actually prefer to be impeached on Ukraine than he would be than if they had impeached him in Russia. Because I think that every time this impeachment, at least for Trump supporters, the way they look at it is that all presidents do this, that they use their position to screw their opponents. And that's what all he was doing. This is a much less of a crime than being a stooge of the Russians, which was what the first thing was about. So when you basically hammer down anybody in authority who has a support base, like Modi or like Trump, you have to be sure that the cause that you're choosing is something that can really arouse genuine emotion. I think the Democrats here have got it wrong in choosing. And it's not a question that hands were tied. They obviously, Mueller report did not give them enough ammunition to go on Russia. They would have loved to go on Russia. But then they decided, okay, screw it, we'll go on this. But coming back to India, I think this, at this point of time, I honestly believe that the emotional oxygen has gone out in terms of the rest of the country. Of course, this can matter in Delhi, this can matter in some urban centers, but elections and the BJP is obviously their main focus is the federal central elections. I think they would actually prefer this to be in the news than many other things which are really uncomfortable for them. And these are also things which you can't really rile people up. Somebody comes and says, why is there no more jobs? You can't say you're an anti-national. You can't use that against that. But on this case, you can definitely use it. So this is BJP's comfort. This is the comfort zone. And the opposition is, again, fighting them in their comfort zone. So I think they're doing it wrong. Okay, so final thing was, did you see Ricky Gervais's roasting of Hollywood? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so nowadays I don't see those shows at all because, again, there's so many good things to see. In growing up, there was not a lot of good things to see on television, so you would follow Oscars at least in those days. But now, and I just, it's even worse than Manik Chand Gutka Stardust Awards. Filmfare Awards. I think they should have Manik Chand Gutka sponsoring it. But it was good to see him. And I think the most important thing that he said was he called out the hypocrisy of those people sitting in the room. And I think it holds true for, you know, our people in the Hindi film industry too, that they work for Ambanis. They work for the very same people who they accuse of the BJP being in their pockets. That they run perhaps one of the most exploitative industries, in which the wealth inequality is perhaps, I mean, look at the salary that a Salman Khan gets or a Anurag Kashyap gets versus what a, you know, clapper boy gets. You know, these people, they run, and they can very easily change it in their own industry, but they choose not to. It is an extremely, extremely exploitative industry. It's an industry which works purely based on privilege and whose son and daughter you are. And for them, you know, it's a good, at least, obviously, nobody in the Hindi film industry would ever dare to do that to in front of the reigning gods. But this is, of course, a different culture. But I think there's somebody needs to tell these guys also the same thing that we understand you're sitting in front of dharna, you're doing dharna in support of JNU and against the dissent in government. But how do you handle dissent within your own industry? I mean, you guys are people in power too. You know, what do you do about representation in your own backyard? How do you're saying the Indian, you're saying we should allow everybody in. How you don't even allow people who not born to other celebrities in your own movies. Okay, you don't even allow them to get even a bit role. So what are you talking about when you're talking about, you know, exploitation? You're talking about exclusivity. So please, you know, spare us the sanctimonious hand-wringing, given who it's coming from. You have every right to your opinion, but and that's what people don't understand. You have every right to your opinion. You have every right to dissent. You have every right to say, but we also have the right to do the exact same thing about you. And if you think that you are punching up, guess what? You people are pretty up to for us to consider punching you as punching up. So if you think punching up is what you're doing, guess what? We are doing that too. So I was very happy they did that. I'm also pretty happy. You know, this was the first time in years where I see that when I look at the Oscar nominations, I've seen about 50% of the movies there. That usually never happens. So who do you think will win the Oscars this time?
I honestly have not even kept track. But go on. I have another question to ask you about the Oscars though.
So I hope that, you know, Bong Joon-ho wins it for, at least wins Best Director for Parasite. Because, you know, Oscars talk about a lot about diversity and talk about, you know, looking beyond. But I think there's that, if they really mean that, then they have to recognize cinema that comes outside Hollywood. It is not just a question of diversity. Doesn't necessarily mean white people versus black people. Diversity means themes. For me, it's not so important. At least this is me saying that it's not important. Let's take an example. If you have an African American directing Thor, that to me is not diversity. The Marvel universe is hardly, you know, the very nature of it. It's not. You can have, you know, people of color, and you can have women and everything that. But ultimately, Thor, Marvel is as non-diverse as things can be. For me, diversity is exposing America to a South Korean drama. That for me is thematic diversity, because I understand that part where what is considered good is decided by what has been considered good before. So if a story in the Oscar jury is predominantly white and male, so things which appeal to whites and males usually are, people like it. I mean, that's the whole thing. This is an art form, right? So anything art, there's no contour for what is, there's no rigid definition of what good art or bad art is. Good art is anything which appeals to you. So if the jury, it's itself. So I think for me, this diversity thing is the jury has to be more diverse. It's not a question of the movies have to be diverse. That comes second. The jury has to be more diverse. So what is considered good? We have more definitions of what is considered to be good. And it is important for, I mean, why can't we have, we always have Oscars as essentially all the movies are there which appeal to Americans. Now, if diversity is something which they want to consider, now everybody is saying that art cannot be divorced from diversity, and what is good art cannot be divorced from diversity, then let's have non-American themes. Let's have things which would not fly for America. Let's have a movie like The Parasite become the best picture. I don't think it will. I think it will. It might be. I don't know. It possibly will be Irishman. I don't know. I mean, that's about as non-diverse a movie as can be. I mean, you've seen that movie. I think for the last 40 years. I think Martin Scorsese has been making that essentially that same movie many times. So this is like, you know, Yash Chopra is another movie from Yash Chopra where Shah Rukh Khan is. Exactly. So for Bollywood, the diversity is not a question of, it's a diversity is have a different theme. You know, don't give the best award, Filmfare award to that's Shah Rukh Khan coming and, you know, the next Shah Rukh Khan movie. Give it to something which is totally different. That for me is diversity. I actually strongly believe that what we consider good fundamentally has to change. That for me, and for that to happen, the jury has to open. And that's something which the Oscars won't do. That's something which the foreign press won't do, because that hits out their own privilege. They're not going to step back. They're not going to say, okay, wait, we won't be part of the jury. We'll let somebody else. So there should be South Koreans in the jury. There should be Indians in the jury. there should be people from different nationalities in the jury, so that different cultural aspects, you know, what is considered good in other cultures is also, I mean, if you see, have you seen Parasite?
So Parasite I don't think that it's going to be like loved by Americans because they just won't get it. But if you're an Indian, if you see Parasite, you will see, wow, I just totally get this movie. You know, the story is so essentially, quintessentially Indian. I mean, of course, it's South Korean. This case is very similar. But it's so...
They don't get a release in India, unfortunately. So I'll have to wait for it to be
on. I'm absolutely sure it's going to be remade in India. This, like, the milieu is just so familiar that I felt that I was watching, you know, a very, very, very good Hindi movie. Like, an unbelievably good Hindi movie, but it's a Hindi movie, no doubt about it. I wish he wins. I wish Bong Joon, who at least wins the best director, it might definitely not win the best film. I think that, I don't know what the best film, I think, I have no idea. I don't think Joker is the best film, by the way. I think it's the best actor, but I don't think it's the best film.
So while you're talking about diversity, even a word also about Stephen King's point of view, you had tweeted about it.
Yeah, so that's again, the point again is, I agree with Stephen King saying that the best thing should win. It should not be a question of reservation in the sense that who made the movie.
Or how many women directors, woman director in this context.
Yes, so that for me, I don't agree with that. I think the more important thing is why Stephen King on the Oscar jury. That for me is more important. Why are people like him on the Oscar jury? They have been there for a long time. If people are really serious about diversity, it's not a question of, hey, Taylor, take a token somebody and put him or her there. If at all this is something we have to, again, it comes back to what I said, we have to change the very notion of what is considered to be art. And right now, what is considered art by at least the academy is what is considered art by white men. I mean, there's no two ways about it. Anything which is... the only way you can get their approbation is if it's something exotic.
Yeah. Which is why, I mean, the movies which we send are either, like you said, exotic, your Slumdog Millionaire, or it's something which tries to ape American movie. Like this year, I think, this was the Gully Boy year, right? When we had...
Yeah, Gully Boy. This was like the worst thing to send. I mean, when I was watching that movie, I thought to myself, man, we made a copy of 8 Mile and thought that this is going to get in the Oscar awards. It was okay. I felt I had said at that point of time that I think it's not a bad idea because at least Americans will understand what rap is and it will be in a social milieu which is familiar to them. This is exactly the problem. Unless it's in a social milieu which is familiar to them, unless Slumdog Millionaire is basically ticks all the boxes of their stereotype about India, it will not be considered to be good art. Let's say if you had made, I don't know, let's think of some very good movie. Okay, let's say, I thought Gangs of Wasseypur is a great movie. I don't think Gangs of Wasseypur perhaps might have had a chance, but there are some movies which I don't think would ever have a chance because of the constitution of the Oscar jury. That is the problem, because they don't think that Indians, they're not interested in problems of Indians unless it is defined by what they believe Indians' problems are.
Yeah, I mean, the whole fascination we have with Oscar validation, keeping that aside, I have a problem with that itself. I think even Mahesh Bhatt has actually put that point quite much better. But something like, let's say, Asuran or a Super Deluxe, I'm right now sticking only to the two Tamil movies that came to mind. They would not, again, maybe a Super Deluxe might be Oscar friendly, but certainly not a movie like Asuran.
Asuran, I saw it. I wouldn't consider it even. It's okay.
I'm saying a movie like that where you need to know the context or you need to understand the social setting there.
Yeah. So I don't think that again. Satyajit Ray did get the Oscar, but he didn't get an Oscar for any of his movies. If you remember, they just gave it to him before he was dying. That's all. Yeah, so they gave it. So it was basically, oh, this guy looks, he's made a lot of good movies, let's just give it to him, he's not going to be alive for long. So this was a kind of almost, this wasn't, I mean, it's again, Lifetime Achievement Awards are somewhat like that, but people who get Lifetime Achievement Awards usually get some awards for their movies because they could never appreciate. And that was, again, this is a topic for another day. For instance, Pather Panchali is not a movie about poverty at all. I mean, poverty is there, but it's actually about somebody who's trying to transcend his circumstances in this case. So it is not about poverty. It was criticized by Raj Kapoor and all these people. There's a huge history about that. This was essentially because Nargis was a Congress and was, of course, in the Congress, and Satyajit Ray refused to work for Raj Kapoor. Raj Kapoor wanted Satyajit Ray to direct a movie for him and cast him, which, of course, Satyajit Ray was not willing to do. So there was a history behind it. But this whole thing about Satyajit Ray selling poverty, you know, that's why if he had sold poverty, he would have won a shitload of Oscars. Okay? He didn't win a shitload of Oscars. He didn't even win a shitload of awards in Cannes also. If you look at his international awards, it's not that he won a lot of them. But he made movies like Charulata, for instance, which got nothing to do with poverty at all. It would not be a movie that would be understood by the Americans at all. It's a movie about rich Indians, you know, a woman who's bored by her marriage. It's not, she's not bored by her marriage. She's bored by the fact that her husband doesn't see her for what she is, even though he claims to be a liberal guy. So, you know, these things don't want this coming from Indians. This would be Charulata, if it was set in a British castle, this would win an Oscar. With white people would win Oscars, would sweep the Oscars. But they don't expect this from Indians. Their mind just closes at this point of time. And that is where diversity has to happen. You have to have more Indians. You have to, the Oscar jury needs to represent, if they want to be a global awards, if they want to be an American award, then yeah, they can continue as the way they are. But they also should have more representation in the jury from different parts of America, which includes Indians, which includes Bangladeshis, which include people who, so that there's some kind of representation of the population inside Oscar jury. But it's not. It's absolutely not. And so for me, rather than having a token this and a token that, the real change has to come in the constitution of the jury and a change in the definition of what good art is. So I agree with that respect with Stephen King. But I think what he calls good art, I think I would possibly have an issue with that and say that that definition of good art has to be not changed, but has to be more expanded. There needs to be a more expansive definition of what good art is.
Okay. Is that a wrap for today? And if you're a regular listener, please do let us know what you enjoy about the podcast and just as important, what it is that you don't. And please also leave a review and a rating on for the podcast on Apple Podcasts or on whichever app you use. That these things help a lot. It go a long way in helping us get more listeners. And of course, let me also remind you about the Patreon page. That's patreon.com/greatbong. And that's the best way to show you that you care. And that's pretty much it for now. And until next time, take care.